King Langalibalele, also known as Mdingi or Mthethwa, is one of the earliest black consciousness leaders, and he fought bravely for the dignity of Africans, defending Hlubi neighbors Amangwe, even at the risk of endangering his own nation. Born in 1814, Langalibalele was a king of the Hlubi from 1839 to 1889. Langalibalele's father was King Timkhulu, and his mother, Ndambosi, was a princess from the Mazibuko clan, and she became the Ndlovukazi of the Hlubi nation. The queen had two sons, Langalibalele and his older brother Dlomo. Under Langalibalele's grandfather, the Emperor Bungani Kanzele, AmaHlubi were the largest nation in Southeast Africa. Unfortunately, as soon as this great man passed away, his empire was split up by his sons, and these separations became even worse when the Hlubi nation was attacked by Madiwani and Bungani's successor, King Timkhulu, was assassinated. Following the death of Timkhulu, the once great empire had been scattered throughout southern Africa, and the core of the nation had been reduced to approximately 10,000 people under the leadership of King Langalibalele, and they occupied an extent of country about the size of Gqeberha. The assassination of King Timkhulu happened because of a disgruntled Sangoma who had been working for him and was unhappy about his compensation. When he protested for better pay, his request was denied. The Sangoma left and formed an alliance with Madiwani, King of Amangwane. In 1818, when Amangwane, who were expecting an attack from Abathethwa under the leadership of General Shaka Kasenza Ngakhona, asked to hide their cattle in Hlubi land and return for them after the aggressors leave, Mthimkhulu agreed. After Shaka and Abathethwa defeated Madiwani and pushed Amangwane southwards, Madiwani went to King Timkhulu to recover his cattle as agreed, but Mthimkhulu refused because AmaHlubi had a strong alliance with the king, Dingiswayo. This is when Madiwani and Zulu Kamafu, the former Sangoma of King Timkhulu, planned their revenge. The two men approached an exceptionally beautiful Ngwane woman and commanded her to sleep with the polygamist king and use muti supplied by Zulu Kamafu that would weaken Timkhulu. The woman succeeded, and King Timkhulu lost all the powers he had been known for and which had earned him the name Timkhulu, meaning powerful muti, and previously enabled him to protect the Hlubi nation in battle. When Madiwani was certain the muti had worked, he prepared a large army and marched towards the Hlubi capital. The battle ended with the death of Mthimkhulu. This defeat of AmaHlubi by the Ngwane army led to a large split of the Hlubi nation. The split resulted in Timkhulu's brother Mahwanqa being declared regent of the core Hlubi section in Natal, because Mthimkhulu's sons Prince Langalibalele and Prince Dlomo were still too young to take over. Mpangazitha, another brother of King Timkhulu, took a sizable section of AmaHlubi to Lesotho and settled there for 2 years before going back to Natal seeking revenge. The ensuing battle with Amangwane would be one of the bloodiest in South African history, taking up lands from northern Tugela to southern Free State and lasting about 5 days of constant fighting. Madiwani again defeated the Hlubi nation, and the war resulted in the death of Mpangazitha. Shaka was now king of AmaZulu, and to avenge the death of his mentor Bungani's sons, declared war on Madiwani and Amangwane, who chose to flee and settle in the Eastern Cape province. Once Prince Dlomo came of age, Mahwanqa was reluctant to relinquish the regency, but his troops revolted and he was killed in the ensuing battle. When Prince Dlomo took over, he was assassinated while paying a visit to Zulu King Dingane, who was at this time eliminating any nation that had an alliance with his brother King Shaka and may want to take revenge, including Shaka's closest friend Zihlondlo from the Mkhize Kingdom. King Dlomo died without issue, and thus the Hlubi kingship passed over to his brother Langalibalele. King Langalibalele's siblings Duba, Mini, and Lupalule plotted to have him killed and eaten by cannibals. It was Prince Duba who took the initiative and asked Langalibalele to accompany him to his mother's place at the Amajuba Mountains. King Langalibalele was then tricked and tied to a pole. It is said that he was saved by girls who saw him and reported the matter to Xiva, his friend. Xiva managed to release King Langalibalele, who escaped during the night and crossed the Mzinyathi River, which was flooded. In 1848, King Bande of AmaZulu had disagreements with Putin, the leader of Amangwe, and sent a Zulu force to take all his cattle. Amangwe then fled to the Hlubi kingdom for protection. This displeased Mbande, and he sent a larger force of 8 Amabutho, led by his Induna, Udangazela, to attack both AmaHlubi and Amangwe. King Langalibalele defeated Mbande's army. However, fearing the tradition of Zulu kings returning with even more warriors from their massive supply, King Langalibalele thought it wise to move his capital to the lands the Hlubi people once occupied in and around Mchezi. This action proved that AmaHlubi were independent from AmaZulu and wished to remain so. AmaHlubi then appealed to the Lieutenant Governor of Natal, Martin West, for protection and brought about 10,000 cattle with them from Umzinyathi. Of the 8,000 Hlubi people who left with King Langalibalele, less than 2,000 were men, and they formed about 5 Amabutho. When approached by the colonial government, Mbande admitted that he had no issues with AmaHlubi, but was after Putin of Amangwe, who had killed Zulu people sleeping at his umuzi. He said AmaHlubi are free to reoccupy their land in Umzinyathi, but would take revenge against Amangwe. King Langalibalele could not accept this because Putin was his maternal uncle. He told the Natal administrators that Amangwe, as the weaker tribe, would receive his protection in times of need. AmaHlubi then permanently settled in Mchezi, which has always been part of Hlubi land, but they had to leave during the war of Madiwani, king of Amangwani, who had killed the Hlubi leader King Mthimkhulu. In the words of Theophilus Shepstone, AmaHlubi were at one time the largest tribe in Southeast Africa, and were among the aboriginal tribes which anciently occupied the territory now forming the colony of Natal, prior to their being disturbed by Shaka's wars, which began to affect them in about 1812. Shepstone is only partly correct because it is a fact that King Shaka never attacked AmaHlubi, as their king Bungani Kantsele was his mentor's mentor and helped Shaka take back the Zulu throne by giving him advice on how to become king. Shaka would also receive military assistance from AmaHlubi's most feared Ibutho, known as Iziendani, who were so powerful that King Shaka saw no one more fit to become his beloved mother's bodyguard. Following the death of Shaka, AmaHlubi's relationship with AmaZulu went sour as Dingana and Bande consolidated their power by removing Shaka's allies. It was under King Cetshwayo that the two nations were on good terms again, as he married one of King Langalibalele's daughters, Mqawe, and viewed Langalibalele as a father figure. He would also ask the Hlubi king to assist in rainmaking. In December 1849, after negotiations in which Shepstone exhibited considerable diplomacy, AmaHlubi, now reduced to 7,000 in number, were granted 364 square kilometers of good land on the banks of the Little Bushman's River, between the newly established European settlements of Estcourt and Drakensberg. It was hoped that AmaHlubi would provide a buffer between the sand people and the settlers, and so protect the settlers' cattle. This area proved too small, and within a few years, the Hlubi settlement had spread to over 6,000 square kilometers. The Hlubi nation was growing under the leadership of King Langalibalele, and the whites demanded hard tax for each family, military levies, and marriage tax. Those who refused to obey were jailed or put to death. King Langalibalele was also unfortunate to rise in power at the same time diamonds were discovered in Kimberley. This discovery in the British colony of Griqualand West attracted thousands of workers, black and white. Many young Subi men became laborers on the mines, and some were paid in guns rather than in money. The Subi laborers habitually brought these guns back to their home in the Natal colony upon returning from the mines. When it became apparent that the number of guns among AmaShubi was increasing at a fast rate, John McFarlane, then magistrate in Estcourt, ordered that Langalibalele hand in his people's guns for registration. The government named 8 men who were to be ordered to register their guns, and after some hesitation, Langalibalele sent in 5 of the named 8 men. King Langalibalele commanded his men to only hand in a few guns and not all of them. When the colonists returned the guns, the king told AmaShubi to separate them from the ones they had kept. When the returning guns were tested, it was clear that they were no longer functional and there were a number of them missing. The colonists then came back to demand more Subi guns. When the king objected that their guns returned defective and less than what they handed in, Langalibalele was charged with treason. In the middle of the gun disaster, the Boers also complained that Subi women were no longer working on their farms and raising their children. They had stopped this at the command of King Langalibalele, who said these were the wives of Subi men and did not belong on white farms nurturing white families. This then became the second charge against Langalibalele and AmaShubi. King Langalibalele was called to answer to these charges, but as king, he had an issue with being summoned like Induna or Inkosi by an administration that was as young as the British colony of Natal. He would make up excuses as to why he would not honor the court summons, usually citing a leg injury. Spies were regularly sent to Subiland, and on one occasion they witnessed the king and his warriors paying respect to the ancestors, but misinterpreted this as a plot against the colonial government. This is when the government gathered its soldiers from the Cape Colony and summoned African troops from Lesotho, Botswana and Eswatini, who would always assist the British in exchange for favors that would ensure their sovereignty. King Langalibalele had his own spies, and when they informed him of the coming war, he moved his livestock and all the vulnerable members such as women, children and the elderly away from the kingdom and settled them on top of the Kahlamba mountain fortress. King Langalibalele and his people then made plans to flee to Lesotho. The king took off his royal robe known as Isipuku and instructed Mpangela, his Nduna, to wear it since they're the same height so the enemy could be confused. Langalibalele then immigrated to Lesotho and Mpangela in another direction. The plan worked because the British mistook the Nduna for Langalibalele. They shot and killed Mpangela. As AmaShubi went into Lesotho, they were greeted by a group under Jonathan, the son of Mulapo. King Langalibalele asked if they would help him find refuge. They agreed and said they were sent to deliver the king to Malapo's estate. The reason Langalibalele trusted Basotho was because he was a great friend of King Moshoeshoe. Moreover, Moshoeshoe's biological great-grandfather Mualle was a Subi man and likely Langalibalele's direct ancestor. You can find out more about Mualle in my other video, Dlamini History, Ulibo and Dinanatelo. The Natal colonial government's military operation to arrest Langalibalele was commanded by Major Dunford. The entire force was made up by 500 whites and about 6,000 Africans, including Basotho, Emaswati and Botswana. Dunford and his force proceeded to the top of the Bushman's River Pass, where they intended to intercept AmaShubi. While Dunford attempted to negotiate with the Subi elders, some of the British forces lost their nerve and shots were fired. Dunford and his men retreated back to the Hladimba Pass, having suffered a handful of casualties. This battle, known as Impiaga Bulihau, lasted 4 days. In an effort to send a strong message to Africans in their colony, the British declared martial law in the lands of Langalibalele and his nation and made a proclamation that said, "The Subi tribe is hereby broken up and from this day forth has ceased to exist." This was followed by the cold-blooded massacre of hundreds of Subi men, women and children. For those who attempted to hide in caves, the government force employed the process of smoking them out, suffocating and shooting them. Amahlubi experienced an ethnic cleansing similar to the Khoikhoi and San people in the Cape Colony. British soldiers were hunting Amahlubi like animals, and people were told they would be rewarded handsomely if they report anybody dressed in Hlubi attire, singing Amahubo in Hlubi, doing Hlubi dances, speaking the Hlubi language, participating in Hlubi initiations known as Ubusoga, or anything else associated with the Hlubi nation. Therefore, Amahlubi had to hide to avoid getting arrested or killed for simply being Amahlubi. Months later, they started to regroup and came out of hiding, but they needed to have a way of recognizing each other to make sure that they're Hlubi. So they came up with Uhulumende Nkosi as a new greeting done before any sort of communication would begin. Over time, the new greeting quickly replaced Ikholeni, which was the original Hlubi way of saying hello. Uhulumende Nkosi was a reference to the white government that abolished their kingdom and arrested Isilo Samahlubi Langalibalele, the son of Mthimkhulu. The British forced Hlubi people in Natal and the Eastern Cape to learn and speak Zulu and Xhosa as their first language. This was further entrenched by the apartheid government, which placed many non-Zulus in the KwaZulu Bantustan. British colonial forces went to collect King Langalibalele from Molapo, who was under the rule of King Letsie. The treacherous Molapo betrayed his late father's close friend, Langalibalele, by handing him and five of his sons over to the colony. The British then proceeded to publicly humiliate Langalibalele, tying him by rope and dragging him with horses all the way from Lesotho to Pietermaritzburg. All of his places of residence were burned to the ground, and Hlubi land was given to the Boers to farm and settle on. Following the martial law order enforced with gross violence and the defeat of King Langalibalele, Hlubi people dispersed all over South Africa, Lesotho, and Zimbabwe looking for shelter. Most went to the Eastern Cape, where there is still the largest concentration of Amakhosi who are Hlubi. King Langalibalele was finally convicted in 1874 and was the first ever king to be locked up on Robben Island in cell number 4664. In his prison cell, Langalibalele made a prophecy and asked the British jailers to engrave it. The prophecy was that one day there will be a prisoner held in that very cell who will be the liberator of black people. The prisoner became none other than Rolihlahla Mandela. The ruling government of the Cape Colony soon came to the conclusion that King Langalibalele had been unjustly sentenced and victimized because of the color of his skin. In August 1875, after the colonial secretary had finally referred the case back to the courts in the Cape Colony, Langalibalele was allowed to leave Robben Island. He was obliged to remain in the Cape Colony for the time being, until 1887, when he was permitted to return to Natal. On his return to Natal, he was confined to the Swartklop location near Pietermaritzburg. He never regained his power as the king of Amahlubi. He died in 1889 and was buried at Dabamhlophe, 25 kilometers west of Mtshezi.